plane got canceled, and he's coming later in the afternoon.
May it please the court, my name is Dean Cook. I represent the appellants. The issue on appeal is whether the current Texas moment of silence statute violates the Establishment Clause. The current Texas moment of silence statute, which is a school statute, requires the observance of 1 minute of silence at each school district, and that during the 1 minute period, each student may, as the student chooses, reflect, pray, meditate, or engage in any other silent activity that is not likely to interfere with or distract another student. And the statute goes on to say that each teacher or other school employee in charge of students during that period shall ensure that each of those students remains silent and does not act in a manner that is likely to interfere with or distract another student. Now, this statute was enacted in September 1st, 2003, and prior to that statute, there was another Texas school moment of silence statute, which simply said a school district may provide for a period of silence at the beginning of the first class of each school day during which a student may reflect or meditate.
You would admit that under the first version, that the student, that there wouldn't be any problems with the Establishment Clause.
For purposes of the this case, yes, yes, Judge.
All right. So the difference between the laws that existed and the law that's under attack today is that it would also include that the student could be silent in praying.
Well, the fact that it mentions pray and the list of allowed activities.
But it also
says
in all other it's definitely talking about silent prayer.
Correct, Judge.
All right, so.
Or any other silent activity.
Or any other silent activity, which could be anything, prayer, non-prayer.
And in the prior statute.
Anti-prayer, however you could describe what you can do silently, you would distinguish the new statute because prayer is now one of the silent things that can be done.
No, Judge, under the previous statute, prayer was also allowed. And the reason for that is because it says that a student may reflect or meditate under the prior statute.
Yeah.
And that implies
prayer
everything
was allowed,
else.
But now, because we use the word specifically that you could do under the old one, this somehow entangles or promotes or creates a violation.
Correct. There's a textual endorsement, I think, there of prayer that's an endorsement. And then second of all, also if you look at the legislative history, which was produced on the record on appeal.
Well, a moment of silence for any other purpose would include those things that are not prayer and not Christian or not specific denomination. That could include praying the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. I mean, it wouldn't. How is you're saying just the mention of prayer is kind of pushes the student to maybe in that silent period of time pray instead of doing the other things? I mean, trying to figure out what you're saying.
Well, if you look at the basic law in this area, there, you've got that three-part Lemon test, and we're looking at, I think that violates that first prong of Lemon, which is the secular purpose. A statute has to have a secular purpose. And by including the word pray in there, that shows non-secular purpose on the part of the legislature, textually in the text of the statute. And in addition to that, there's non-secular purpose in the legislative history, which is in the record.
But there's some pretty strong legislative history directed to teachers' ability to keep a nice, disciplined, quiet classroom. They also added the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States and to the state of Texas. They called it a minute of silence. They designated it had to be a minute.
Correct, Judge. And those are not, as far as those other things, the pledge and all of those other issues are not what the issue is on appeal. And in fact, if you look at the legislative.
You can't just nitpick the legislative history. There's some pretty strong legislative history that is not directed to religious intent or motive or to the use of the word prayer.
Correct, but they could have done all of that without including the wording of the statute as they worded it. And in fact, since there was already a prior moment of silence statute, they could have simply had a statute saying that we're going to have a Pledge of Allegiance now and Pledge of Allegiance to the Texas flag in addition to that without wording the statute the way that they worded it. And obviously, a legislature in this day and age is not dumb enough to simply say that they're trying to put prayer back in schools. And I think
Would you be satisfied if the statute read moment of silence to pray or not pray?
I think that would be better, and I think that actually gets more into the second prong of the Lemon Test with regard to non-secular, the effect of the statute and whether it has a non-secular effect. Because basically they're giving school children who are religious a legal advantage because they say right in the statute, you can pray. But if you're a non-religious student, it doesn't say anywhere in there that you cannot pray.
Well, you can do any other silent activity.
Right, but it's still not clear. You know, there's obviously
The parents have to go get lawyers.
Tell
their children they don't have to pray. Do you?
I think that might be a possibility. We're assuming that not most parents' children aren't that legally sophisticated, and they may not be sophisticated
and
enough to understand.
How sophisticated
that.
Do you have to be to know that you can pray or do anything else that's silent? How sophisticated do you have to be to know that that means you don't have to pray and you can do anything else?
Judge,
If that's what it says.
Well, Judge, I think, and if you look at the Wallace opinion, they speak of the fact that this isn't, you can't just simply say that including words like prayer is just simply some form of symbolic speech on behalf of the majority. They say that this can't be just dismissed the case on that basis.
Yeah, but you got to take into context of legislative history and what's going on in the case and the actual words that are involved. I mean, I just find it kind of a difficult situation to say that because they mention something that you can do, that you could do before, that somehow that changes the whole purpose and or removes all the other non-religious purposes.
Well, I think it's a matter of kind of ratcheting it up on the part of the Texas legislature. For instance, they already had a statute that specifically said students have a right to pray in school, and it's exercise of constitutional right to pray, which I think is superfluous in and of itself. But it's like the Texas legislature is always trying to push the envelope, and this is just one more example of that. And I think that if it was already clearly stated in statute that children had a right to pray, so now they're going to include the word pray in this new moment of silence statute. And I think that shows part of the non-secular purpose of the Texas state legislature in this situation.
Well, let me ask you about pushing the envelope. You're arguing that the statute advances Protestant Christianity? Where?
In the sense that most mainstream Protestant-type Christian religions can pray silently. And this came up in the legislative history. There were legislators.
Well, I do believe my Jewish friends pray silently.
Right, but it came
You've
up.
Probably got two Catholics here that can do it too.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there were two Hispanic legislators who spoke of, I guess there's Our Lady Guadalupe, which is some form of prayer ritual that involves motion and movement, and they asked would they be allowed to do that, and Senator Jeff Wentworth, the sponsor of the bill, said, no, I don't know that they will be allowed to do that. And they asked about Buddhists humming, during the moment of silence or making other audible noises.
Well, silence is silence, right?
Right, but the point is it discriminates against non-mainstream religions.
No, the whole purpose of this, I think, of the statute is to set a tone in the morning, a quiet time, so that they can discipline the children, keep them quiet, and have a reflective moment to get ready for their day of school.
Correct.
So if you're having kids moving around and chanting, of course that defeats the entire purpose of having some
But they already had that under the prior moment of silence statute, which simply spoke of reflection and meditation. And now, once again, they're moving to the statute where they're going to include pray, and they're going to endorse that as an activity. And in fact, it's not even pray for everybody; it's pray for mainstream Protestant Christian religions.
It doesn't say that.
Well, but it's implied in the statute because it speaks
not
of
implied anywhere.
It because it speaks of the teacher ensuring that those students remain silent during the moment of silence.
Did you make the argument below that this discriminates against non-traditional religions?
Yes, Judge.
I didn't see it in your brief.
I believe it's in my appellant's brief, somewhere in there. And there, if you look in the legislative history.
Below, did you make it in the
district? Oh, yeah, in the district court, yeah. In fact, I even brought that up at oral argument. I don't remember where at, but if you look in the actual the transcript, it's brought up in there as well. So basically, like I said, and I've already briefly touched, the first thing you have to have is secular legislative purpose under this Lemon Test. And if you look at the main case that I think is the most important case in the situation is Wallace v. Jaffrey, and that's a U.S. Supreme Court case. And basically that involved the Alabama legislature passing a moment of silence statute that initially just spoke of silence for meditation. And then later on, the Alabama legislature passed another statute that spoke of meditation or voluntary prayer. And this went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court said that the purpose had to be sincere and not a sham. And it also said that given the fact that attendance at public schools is mandatory and given the impressionability of school children, that the courts have to be especially vigilant to ensure that there are no Establishment Clause violations in this public school context. And the court did mention that voluntary prayer was significant, that textual inclusion of voluntary prayer was significant in their decision. In addition to that, if you look, and this is mentioned in my brief, two U.S. Supreme Court cases after Wallace, they said that the inclusion of the word prayer was the reason that the Wallace court found the Alabama statute unconstitutional. And like I said, this case is similar to Wallace in the sense that there was already a pre-existing moment of silence statute that simply spoke of meditation or reflection, and then they included this new statute that spoke of pray, just like in Wallace. Now, if you look through the legislative history,
I don't recall whether in Wallace there was anything comparable to the other section in the Texas statutes that talked about prayer. I don't think there was there?
That there was textual inclusion of the word prayer in the Wallace statute?
Yeah, before. See, we have this sort of anomaly of two different sections that are involved here, in effect.
Right.
And I don't recall that was the case in
the Wallace one. There was a pre-existing. My understanding of the Wallace opinion was there was a pre-existing moment of silence statute, and that just spoke of reflection or meditation. And then a year or two later, they passed a statute that spoke
we're
of
talking about
a separate section. And I think I don't know if the pre-existing statute got abolished at that point or what, but they'd eventually amended in a new statute or amended the existing statute.
But Justice O'Connor and Wallace made a point in her concurrence of saying that even if a statute specifies a student may pray, the state hasn't encouraged prayer over any other specified alternatives, such as any other activity or whatever the moment of silence would allow. So I don't.
O'Connor seems to mention that, and it seems like she was more concerned with the legislative history and Wallace, but I would note that I believe there were still five justices that were involved in the majority opinion, and then O'Connor was a sixth concurrence opinion. And if you look at that majority opinion, they seem to say that there was an unrebutted there was no evidence of secular purpose presented by the state, and then they say even if there was secular purpose presented by the state, here's why it would fail, and they mention the fact that the statute spoke of prayer. And the fact that there was already a pre-existing statute that simply spoke of a moment of silence, and then they also point to the legislative history in Wallace.
But in Wallace, even the five-member majority specifically state that there wasn't anything advanced by the state or in the legislative history to show
correct
any secular purpose. Now, that's not the situation here. Both the state is advancing, and the legislative history reflects purposes other than prayer.
Right, and they mentioned that it has to be sincere and not a sham. And the state here did mention three proposed secular purposes, and that was promotion of patriotism, thoughtful contemplation, and accommodation of religion. And the trial court rejected the patriotism and the accommodation one, and said the thoughtful contemplation was a basis for the trial court's decision. But I would note there that the trial court said that the patriotism rationale didn't work because the prior moment of silence statute in Texas already allowed for thoughts of patriotic thoughts by school children, even though it didn't mention in the text anywhere anything about patriotism. So the trial court, in my opinion, contradicted itself because thoughtful contemplation was also allowed under the prior pre-existing moment of silence statute. So based on that, I think there are no basis to secular purposes for the existing Texas moment of silence statute. I see my time is almost up. And I would just note I think the proper standard in this case is de novo, and if you look at this court's prior opinions on these matters, that these constitutional law matters are decided de novo rather than under the clearly erroneous standard. Thank you.
Thank you. General Ho.
May it please the court. The observance of a moment of silence was first suggested by Justice Brennan in 1963 as a secular and constitutional means of protecting private liberty. And it was in the same spirit that Texas amended its law in 2003. And we submit that the events of 1963 are directly relevant to this case because several of plaintiffs' arguments would essentially condemn all moments of silence and thus must be rejected out of hand. I know we heard that Mr. Cook said that for purposes of this case, he might not argue that, but he carefully, I think, cabined his submission today. In addition, plaintiffs' more pointed attacks about the 2003 law are also misplaced because they misunderstand the purpose and the function of the 2003 amendments. And I'd like to address both of these contentions in turn. When you look at the concurring opinion in Abington School District versus Shemp, Justice Brennan observed a couple things. He said that teacher-led audible prayer, that is unconstitutional, but he said it's not just unconstitutional, it's also completely unnecessary because there are secular ways to start the school day on the right note. And he gave a couple examples. He suggested readings from great Americans or historical documents. He suggested the daily recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance, which we also have in the 2003 amendment. And he specifically suggested, and I quote, the observance of a moment of reverent silence at the opening of class. And this suggestion by Justice Brennan received court approval in Wallace versus Jaffray. Now, when Texas amended its law in 2003, I think it's important to understand what was going on, why they made this amendment. The pre-existing regime authorized a moment of silence, but this was a purely an issue of local option. The legislators in 2003 decided that they wanted to make this a matter of statewide policy, and their reason for doing so is very important here, because many school districts had declined to implement any moment of silence, anyone, let alone one that actually allowed students to pray during that period of time. And the legislators noted that the school districts failed to do so really out of a fear of litigation, presumably out of the Establishment Clause, and a fear of sort of a sense of confusion and uncertainty over what the Establishment Clause does and does not require. Given those concerns by the legislators, it was only natural that the legislature in 2003 would not only want to make it an issue of statewide policy, but they'd want to make it absolutely clear that any activity is permitted during this time period, including, of course, prayer, but of course, including any silent activity, so long as it's not disruptive. I want to talk a moment about essentially why this word pray was so important. Essentially, it is to make sure that school districts know that it is okay to do so. And there are numerous
data points. Oh, I know. If you listen to these people on the radio, you know, you got these people on the extreme sides of these issues that are content to make these statements that are not true about the law. On one side, you have these people that get on the radio every day and say, you can't pray in school because the Supreme Court doesn't let you. And that's totally false. That's false. And then on the other side, you have another group of people that just take an extreme view and give their interpretations, and it's parroted by these supposedly smart people on radio and TV. And so you have the extremes driving the issue about what the law is in the United States, and they constantly put out false information. So I can see why the legislature might think that it might be important to let people know what they really can do and put it in the form of a statute. But you have problems, a little bit of problems, because in their zeal to do these things and to appeal to some of these people that are preached on by these commentators is sometimes go a little far. Perhaps Wentworth went a little far in what he said. But nonetheless, I can see why the legislature would want to make it perfectly clear that you can pray. So I don't see too much of a problem with it. But what I would like to hear from you is how you would distinguish this case from Wallace.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think Your Honor does hit on a very important point that in terms of this confusion over what the law requires and forbids, that I'd like to get back to. But on Wallace specifically, I think there are a number of responses as to why this case is really quite different from Wallace versus Jaffray. First, if you just look very narrowly at the provision that enumerates the various activities that will be authorized during this minute of silence, Texas did not just add the word pray, of course. They specifically added a catch-all phrase that we've talked about. This fact alone, if you had nothing else, this fact alone would distinguish this case from Wallace, and I think Judge Lynn noted this on page 838 of her opinion. I'd also note that Texas was just following Virginia law in making these changes. In addition, you have a larger purpose in this statute. It's not just about adding pray or adding even the catch-all phrase. There's a larger purpose with the 2003 law that does make this case fundamentally different from the Wallace case. This major change that I was talking about earlier, from local option to statewide policy, was done for a deeply important reason, because school districts, perhaps misinformed, as Your Honor was referring to, school districts were not implementing
this policy. They're scared they're going to get sued no matter what they do.
Precisely. Precisely. And this appears specifically in the record on pages 146 and 147. And so given that these school districts were, of course, not implementing the moment of silence, again, any kind, let alone one that would allow private choice to pray, it's understandable that the legislators would really just want to reform the statute once and for all, get it right, clarify so that there is not this confusion with the two extremes that you're talking about. And that, of course, makes this case very different from Wallace. I think, finally, we would submit that the plaintiffs have misread the Wallace decision itself. I know they want you to read the decision to essentially say that sort of once you've enacted a law, you can't change it. We'd submit that that really doesn't make sense. I mean, this is not a formalistic area of constitutional law. It's a very substantive area of constitutional law. And the court never certainly said that as long as Alabama had simply deleted the word pray, that was sort of the critical test. The issue they focused on was legislative purpose. And in Wallace, of course, it was unrebutted. It was universally accepted that that record was completely and only about religious purpose. This case is radically different. We have put forward a number of secular purposes that we've discussed already.
Mr. Ho, I asked Mr. Cook if he was worried that these non-religious or irreligious parents or whatever would have to hire a lawyer to tell their children that they didn't have to pray. What is your take, or what is your position on Mr. Cook's answer that the statute would be all right if it said pray or not pray?
Well, I think there are a couple of answers. One, we think that's what the statute says now, with the not only prayer but also meditation, reflection, and very specifically this catch-all phrase. So we submit that the statute actually satisfies the test he seems to be arguing today. I think it's important also to talk about what's in this record that further confirms this importance of really providing some clarification. If you look at the very legislative debate over whether to include or delete the word pray, it's a very interesting debate on pages 121 through 23 of this record. There's a Senator Hinojosa who's essentially proposing that perhaps we should delete the word pray, and I think he makes the mistake that Your Honor was referring to. He says that prayer belongs at home, in our churches and the synagogues, but it's not supposed to be in the public school system. And he's talking, I think, pretty broadly here, not just collective prayer that the court's already spoken of, but private prayer. Senator Wentworth, the sponsor, politely disagrees, and he says it respectfully, I disagree with you, that it should be only about at the home and in the church. Prayer can be wherever we are. We submit that this is a deeply important dialogue for a couple of reasons. One, imagine that the Hinojosa Amendment, to take out the word prayer, imagine that it had passed. What would the message be based on this dialogue? I think the message would be quite clear that you can have a minute of silence, but perhaps you shouldn't pray during this time. That's certainly what Senator Hinojosa, perhaps mistakenly, but I think he was driving at that. Second, if a state senator has this impression of the law that I think Your Honor has noted sort of not quite correct in terms of what the Constitution requires, certainly we can imagine school districts, parents, students being equally mistaken about whether they're allowed to privately engage in activity or not. Second, again, consider the very reason for the bill, this issue of going from local option to statewide policy, the need to be, the school districts being afraid of litigation that appears on pages 146 and 47. Consider that Texas was just trying to follow Virginia law, and the Fourth Circuit had specifically said that the Virginia law was perfectly fine in part because they were just trying to avoid discrimination against people who happen to want to pray. And as you noted, Judge Clement, the plaintiff's own argument today is that if you don't have the word pray, then or not pray, somehow you're going to have to hire lawyers to really figure out what the statute says. That may or may not be an issue, may not require lots of lawyering, but certainly suggests that providing that extra clarification would be a good thing in this
Counsel,
context.
Let me make an inquiry. Now, at the time that the new amendment was made, did and you're talking about the legislative history with all with respect to these purposes and whatever, was that redone again for the amendment, or did they only advance the prayer at the time that the amendment in 2003 was being considered? In other words, did they make another legislative history for the 203 amendment and include therein that it was for patriotism and reflective thought and all these other things, or did that only happen under the prior version?
If you're talking about the 2003 legislative history.
The latest amendment.
Right, exactly. This latest one where they switched from local to state and added the catch-all and all this. Admittedly, the legislative history, it's not perfectly organized, as most histories are not. It doesn't specifically say this is where we're going to talk about the purpose. That being said, I think it appears through numerous statements. There are numerous statements from the sponsors about how they want to preserve private choice, how they specifically do not want to establish or favor prayer over other options. It specifically talks about wanting to comply with the Constitution.
Did they have anything about loyalty or the other? I mean, what I'm trying to do is that Wallace seemed to distinguish about things that already existed and why the change now changed the purpose. And so I'm wondering if there's any parallels here to show that it's parallel or to distinguish it from that portion of the Supreme Court opinion that says, well, this change only was affected to make this change, and therefore that's its purpose in the absence of other things being advanced. But to that extent, I'm trying to find out how parallel this is to Wallace.
I think there are three parts of the record that I would point Your Honor to that make this case very, very different from Wallace. I've gone through them a little bit before, but on pages 121 through 123, this discussion about whether you should include the word pray. It's a very very tight but very important discussion, and the submission is if you take the word pray out, that would suggest that prayer would not be in school anymore, and that's why Senator Wentworth very much wanted to make sure that that private right was preserved. This fear of litigation, why school districts weren't doing any moment of silence, let alone one that would allow private choice, that appears at 146 and 147. Of the record. And finally, there are numerous statements about wanting to comply, wanting to follow Virginia law. That certainly appears on 272, 277, but really throughout the case. I'm sorry, those pages were from the Fourth Circuit opinion where they said, we want to pass this law to prevent discrimination from on the basis of religion. In closing, I think plaintiffs' claims really have to fail for two reasons. First, they essentially submit that moment of silence laws are inherently discriminatory. It's a little hard to believe, though, that this kind of discrimination would have been endorsed or tolerated by Justices Brennan, Powell, O'Connor, the rest of the court, not to mention Judge Lynn. I'd also note that when you look at what the plaintiffs in the Walls versus Jaffrey case, what they were litigating in the Supreme Court, section 2 of their Supreme Court brief specifically puts forth this discrimination theory, and the court obviously dismissed it, had no problem endorsing the concept, despite that. Nor have plaintiffs satisfied the very strict standard for imputing the 2003 Act in particular. far from being motivated by a predominantly religious purpose, and that is the test. It was enacted simply to fulfill Justice Brennan's vision and to give clear direction to school districts that they have nothing to fear, nothing to fear from moments of silence, and certainly nothing to fear from students who want to make this personal, private choice to pray during that time. Thank you.
Mr. Sasser.
May it please the court. Despite the best efforts of courts, and probably due to the misinformed public debate on some of these issues, schools have a history of confusion regarding the religious issues that are on campus. In 1995, President Clinton tried to help clarify some of these issues by issuing guidelines, and part of those guidelines actually specifically reminded schools across the country that it's okay for students to pray during a moment of silence if they want to choose to do that. Now, there's been numerous attempts to clarify some of these issues by Congress and the Texas legislature, yet even the debates that we just heard about regarding the moment of silence revealed there's some lingering problems, perhaps with Senator Hinojosa mistakenly thinking that prayer is actually not allowed in school at all. I think schools sometimes get confused about this, and when they're trying to decide these types of issues, they err on what they think is the perceived side of caution, and many times that's just to prohibit whatever religious expression might happen. That's why the 1995 guidelines, and in addition, this statute are needed. They give appropriate guidance in this area of the law to students and parents and school administrators so that they know what can be done or what not be done instead of having sort of nebulous prohibitions. What's really important here is that when the law in 2003 went from a permissive statutory regime where the schools could choose to have a minute of silence if they wanted to, lots of schools weren't doing that. That's reflected in the legislative record. So when they were going to say, now we're going to have to do that, there's going to be lots of school districts that are going to be unfamiliar with this. And they need additional guidance to make sure, because you can imagine a scenario where a student might ask a teacher, now we're doing this minute of silence. Is it okay for me to pray during this minute of silence? And maybe a teacher, not knowing what the appropriate answer would be, might say, well, no, you can, or let's not do that now. And that could obviously cause some difficulties and some problems. So providing additional guidance, I would think, in this area of the law should always be the best approach. And I think that's more really the modern approach, starting from 1995 on, is to provide additional guidance, make sure that the students, the parents, the school officials, state legislators, the courts are all on the same page, and not driven by sort of that extreme debate that Judge Benavides was referring to. Now, Senate Bill 83 is really about this important information revision. I think the catch-all provision was very important because I think it helped give guidance, again, so the students understand that they can engage in whatever activity they want to, including just silent, you know, any silent activity. I think that's an important revision in the law, and I think that legislators should be encouraged to, in this area of the law, to make amendments as new information becomes available, as new court decisions come out, such as the one that was in the Virginia statute in the Fourth Circuit Brown. And I think that kind of encouragement is very important. I also think Justice Brennan suggests in Abington versus Shemp on page 281 to the beginning of the school day with some sort of moment of something. It was very important, and I think adding the pledge to this statute is sort of in compliance with what Justice Brennan was talking about. Now, there's lots of different issues that can arise sometimes in schools, and I think I would just maybe close with this, unless there's further questions, that no statute or regulation in this area is ever going to be perfect. It's never going to be fully comprehensive. But there's multiple steps, especially starting in 1995 and moving on to the modern era. There are lots of steps that legislators have taken and the executive branch has taken in order to try to clarify these issues. And I think they should be encouraged to continue to provide more information to the students and parents and school officials rather than less. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cook.
First, I want to go back to Wallace again real quick. If you look, and now admittedly, Wallace isn't entirely, the opinion isn't entirely clear on some points. But if you look back in the opinion, they speak of the unrebutted evidence of legislative intent contained in the legislative record and the testimony and say that that's the reason why they are that the state didn't meet its burden, basically. And I think that the court there was saying that the state has an initial burden to show a secular purpose and that they didn't meet that. But then if you go on from right in that paragraph, the Wallace opinion says that even if that was true, basically, or even if they had presented purpose of secular legislative secular purpose, that it still would have failed. And they basically go on and talk about the issue of the text and the fact that it mentions the term voluntary prayer and the fact that there was a pre-existing statute that did not mention that. And it also they also mention the legislative history and that there was no secular purpose shown there either. Now, I don't know if the appellee is trying to say that the rest of the Wallace statute or the Wallace opinion is dictum, but it's not dictum. And in fact, it's a black letter law, issue of law that if there are two independent reasons in an opinion, a Supreme Court opinion given for for the reason that the court is ruling a certain way, then they're both considered binding, and they're both considered binding precedent. So I think it's disingenuous to say that it's simply the fact that the Alabama didn't present any legislative purpose of secular legislative purpose.
Counsel, one of the problems I have, I think, candidly, is that if in Wallace there's no statutory history that shows a secular purpose, and the religious purpose is not rebutted, and then you apply the test, of course the religious purpose is going to be primary purpose because that's the only thing that they have before them was the religious purpose. So if the only purpose is religious, obviously the primary purpose is going to be religious.
Well, I think that if there actually was kind of implicitly evidence, and that was, A, the text of the statute. And they looked at the text of the statute and determined that there was, you know, even though it spoke of meditation, it still was not, that wasn't good enough secular purpose, basically. And there was, there was evidence of legislative history because they had the bill sponsor get on the stand in the trial court, and he said that I didn't have any other purpose in mind. Basically, and it's also interesting. In a footnote in Wallace, they mention.
But in Texas, in this thing, at least we have some legislative history that was built up, where they talk about why they were doing it, and both before and for this amendment. And so we've got to weigh that, and then I believe that we would have to say that it's in order for you to prevail that its primary purpose was to advance religion, right?
That the proposed secular purposes presented by the legislature are not sham.
Well, that's a kind of a, it's either the primary purpose is religion or establishment, or that these other things are a sham.
Right.
Either one.
Right. And I think that, and I propose that, and this is based on the other circuit courts that have just looked at these issues, the May court, the Bound court, and the Brown court, and those are all other circuits. And in addition to Wallace, if you look at all of those, I think that you come up with a kind of a general principle that when dealing with these moment of silence, school moment of silence laws, for looking, for purposes of seeing if there was secular legislative purpose, you look at the text, and if the text has religious language in it, like pray, then it's going to fail just on the basis of the text, and that gives you a bright line rule for determining whether these moment of silence statutes are going to fail. And then if the text has no religious language in it, then next you can look at the legislative history and determine whether the legislative history shows any non-secular purpose. I would also note in the legislative history that appellee's counsel spoke of this, that when Senator Wentworth, the sponsor, was asked why he didn't want to delete the word pray from the moment of silence statute, if you read that section, he really couldn't come up with a secular purpose there. He just kind of hemmed and hawed about it and went on. And then the third thing, I think, and the state keeps on coming back to this, is this accommodation rationale. And the amicus attorney also spoke of this accommodation rationale. But the Supreme Court has been clear that a majority cannot use the machinery of the state to help it exercise its religion, and that was in the Abington v. Shimp case, I believe. I see I'm out of time, so I'll stop. Thank you.
Thank you.